Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting college football bowl games, good luck. No, seriously, it's never been harder. And you don't want to be hurting your bankroll. You want to make sure you're doing your homework. Listen to Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I will be breaking down every single bowl game, dropping new episodes nearly every day throughout college football's postseason. Spicing things up with a 12-team playoff. Can't wait to see some of those teams from the South come up north for the snow. Be sure to subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Evan and Tiki on this very busy Monday after Thanksgiving. Welcome back to work. Welcome back to the real life. Welcome back to the real world. And welcome back to losing the 7 pounds you just put on from Thanksgiving, which I read is the average, that the average amount of weight gained by Thanksgiving and then the days that follow it are actually 4.5 pounds. Can you believe that? 4.5 pounds stuffing your face with turkey.
Yeah, but that's just, it's temporary weight, right? It's not like permanent.
Temporary for who?
For the next year, for the year after.
Also, I think, Sean, you tell me this, because you've done a great job losing weight. It is much easier and quicker to put the weight on.
No doubt.
Than to subtract it away.
Yeah, I mean, I sat there like a fat gargoyle yesterday feeling. I've realized, I've done a lot of fat science, okay? And I realized the problem with Thanksgiving. It's not the day Thanksgiving. It's that we can't get rid of these damn leftovers.
Correct.
And we continue.
You're almost better off just tossing them.
You're right. And I know that sounds insensitive to those who are hungry or whatever.
Or giving them away. Right.
Because I sat there, how many passes did I go by the fridge? There's the leftover stuffing, the turkey, the desserts, if you have the, you know?
That's really the big thing.
I must have had...
It's the sugar, because everybody brings a dessert.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You get, like, a pie, then you get a... You get pints of ice cream.
Right, pastries,
cookies, everything.
I had them
and
for
those
4 days.
Those are harder to throw away.
4 days I
had them. Those are probably easier to throw away because you just throw away.
Right.
You know they're going to spoil in a week, so just toss them.
9:30 this morning, I had 7 cannolis left in a box. I opened that fridge and I said, enough already, and I dumped it because I felt like crap.
No, you're right. And the other thing that makes it difficult is not only the leftovers, but think about it. It's December 2nd. We are literally just 3 weeks away from another holiday in which you're stuffing your face and you're eating, and then there's leftovers, and then you may go back to work for a day or two, but not really, which means you're eating worse. So I think what makes it difficult is not just Thanksgiving and Thanksgiving weekend, but also the point of losing the 4 pounds and going back on a diet seems pointless because you know in 3 weeks you're getting fat again.
And how many of these offices now start having the catered food come in? Everybody's doing like the alcohol. I mean, it doesn't end. This is where you punt to the Super Bowl.
You're right. You're right. And I don't know if you guys heard us on Thanksgiving, but I was drinking rum chata, as I explained as we began the show.
Yes, you told us.
I continued the rum chata after, and I found myself in a very tough spot at about 8 o'clock at night where I was... How do I say this nicely? I was very drunk. And I'm not one to get drunk.
Were you a rum chatterbox?
You know what happens when I'm drunk? I don't know if this surprises you or not. I become very lovey. So instead of becoming, you know...
Belligerent.
Angry. Yeah, angry, mean. I end up doing the opposite. So if you guys were around me, as opposed to my wife and kids, it would have sounded like this. Man, Tiki... I just love doing the show with you, man. Like I was a Jet fan, but I loved watching you play football. And Loogie, oh, you're so funny with the dogs. Man, you're very funny. And you know what? I like the Knicks. But if the Knicks are going to win, I do it for you because you, my man, you're a producer. I send you all those annoying text messages with videos, and you always have the audio ready. You, Sean Hall, you're like a big teddy bear, man.
Thanks.
You're like a big cuddly. That's what would happen if I was drunk around you guys. I'm very loving. That's I go the opposite of what most people are.
By the way, speaking of Thanksgiving, I speak for the entire show when I say that your father-in-law's stuffing this morning was a fantastic. Thanks again for bringing it in.
No,
like
I brought the plastic
year.
Forks. I figure around 4 o'clock we need
that. Didn't get it this time either?
I forgot. I'll bring it in tomorrow, I promise.
That's going to be gone.
You think so?
Yes. Week later.
Yeah.
Week later, leftovers.
No, you're right. What's the cutoff where you don't want the leftovers?
You told me last year you freeze it for how long?
We do. We keep it for a long time. But I'm asking for you guys. Like, if I bring it in tomorrow, is that still acceptable? It's been less than a week.
If it's delicious, then we'll take it.
Right. Yeah. Of course. Also, isn't he a chef? He can just whoop it up at any point.
No.
Fresh batch.
Don't make him do extra work. If you have leftovers, we'll take it.
There you go. We'll get to the Giants and Brian Daboll and what happened on Thanksgiving and if that changes your view on his hot seat coming up in just a few minutes. Let's go to Bill and... Oh, what the hell did I just do? Oh, here we go. Bill in Shoreham, New York. How are you, Bill?
What's up, Bill?
Guys, thanks for taking the call. Listen, what team do you know, management, owner, et cetera, what team do you know that has a Hall of Fame quarterback and no rookie quarterback to mentor and groom? That's number one. Number two, they figured that Aaron could get by with the offense scoring just enough points, which has not really happened. But then they go ahead and tinker with a solid defense. They make the stupidest decisions of any professional sports organization. Thank
God. A couple of things. First of all, Tom Brady's backup in Tampa was a 31-year-old named Blaine Gabbert. So not every franchise necessarily has a young guy that you're going to tutor behind him. And I would argue that Jordan Travis is on the Jets, even if he had an injury setback and he's not going to play this year.
Gabbert was more just the filler in case they had to play. Kyle Trask is their actual backup.
Was he there in 2020?
The young player. He's been there for like 4 years now.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. So they did
been there for a while.
So they did have a young player to learn behind Tom
and
Brady.
Garoppolo's the number two behind Stafford right now.
But I don't think he's ever going to, Trask, I don't think he's ever going to be a player. Like they didn't, they're not grooming him. In fact, when Tom Brady left, they went and got Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, I don't think you always have to have that young player that's learning. And I think Jordan Travis sort of fit that. Now, as far as some of the mistakes they made in terms of acquisitions defensively, trading John Franklin Myers for a fifth-round pick was stupid. Mm-hmm. We just got to call him out for that. That was dumb. You know, the decision to not re-sign Bryce Huff is a money thing. You're also deciding how much do you want to give him coming off one big year. And truthfully, Will McDonald's had a great year. Like, there are a few little stories around the Jets that no one will talk about because they're 3-9 and they stink. Will McDonald had his 10th sack yesterday.
Right. He was impactful. He's been impactful, really, for a lot of this season. Even early on when I thought it was kind of just getting lucky sacks.
Yeah.
He actually works his butt off. And he's turning into a really good pass rusher. But the depth options that you were talking about, John Franklin Myers being one, that's where you're starting to see the difference with this Jets front. It's not; it doesn't feel as full as it once did.
Yep.
Like the replacements, you didn't lose that much. What's Quentin Jefferson?
Mm-hmm.
He's a huge one.
It was a huge loss.
He was really impactful
in the
interior.
And they had a tough time replacing those guys. Those are some of the mistakes that Joe Douglas made. And ultimately, did it cost them? Well, I think little things have cost them because every game they've lost outside of just the San Francisco game, and I guess you could argue the Pittsburgh or the Arizona game because the Pittsburgh game was close. One play goes a different way.
Yes.
They're winning that game.
Right. If he connects with Garrett Wilson on that overthrow before the pick six, it's a different game. Right? It's 28-7, and the Seahawks have a long way to come back.
Yeah.
They're pushed into being one-dimensional. Which obviously benefits any defense.
Chris is calling from Flint, Michigan. How are you, Chris?
Hey, doing good, guys. Evan, Tiki, Sean, Tommy, hope you guys had a good holiday.
Thank you.
So before I get to the reason I called, which is for you, Evan, I wanted to kind of piggyback off of something Tiki said. The Jameis Winston sound bites, especially this year, have been fantastic. I think it was the very first game. I think it was the first game he came in for Deshaun. He kind of started in the Eminem Lose Yourself.
He said, I think there
was a white boy up there in Michigan.
Right.
He killed me.
He was like, he only get one shot. And I remember listening to it, and I was like, Chris, I was like, this is like your fifth shot, James.
Okay, so here's why I called. Evan, you said that Detroit has to have home field advantage if they want to go through Philadelphia or whatever, you know, to make it to the Super Bowl. I would normally agree with that. I disagree with you, and here's the reason why. First, I'll just say the one thing obviously we saw was Jared Goff playing that really bad rain game in Green Bay. He looked fine. I'm not worried about Goff. We have a great offensive line. Tiki, you're a running back. Yep.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
So this running in the cold weather works. Right. We got Sonic and Knuckles. We got a great running back tandem. I'm really not worried about that. So I get what you're saying. Normally that's how it goes with these indoor teams. You know, people are calling us the greatest show on turf 2.0. We do more than just pass the ball.
I agree. And I think you guys are, I would give you this. I think you guys are better equipped yeah. to win a game like that.
You just got to keep your knucklehead Jameson Williams under wraps.
Yeah, seriously. He's made a couple of mistakes since coming into this league.
Right.
But the point remains the same. The Detroit Lions and the Minnesota Vikings made a very, very big mistake. They took the advantage that they had of playing in a very cold climate, mm-hmm. and they eliminated it.
Yeah.
So even if Sean doesn't like watching the Bills against the Niners in the snow, the one thing he admitted in that discussion, without admitting it, is the Buffalo Bills had a great advantage last night. Correct?
Yes, they did. Yeah. There's no doubt about that.
Okay.
Teams that are used to practicing and playing in ridiculously bad weather conditions, they have an advantage.
Okay, period. So we all accept that. Do you accept that too, Tommy?
I do.
Okay. The Detroit Lions and the Minnesota Vikings, who play in horrible weather conditions, gave that up when they built a dome.
Mm-hmm.
Most other teams are used to playing, whether it's inside or nice weather or average weather. But the horrible weather, the Lambeau Field in January, is a distinct advantage that the Packers have had for many, many years. Playing in the snow is an advantage that the Buffalo Bills had, that the New England Patriots had. Obviously, when the Patriots play the Bills, you could kind of cancel that out because the Patriots are a cold weather team. But if you're Detroit and Minnesota playing in a horribly weathered division, you gave that up. And to me, the results aren't a complete coincidence that the Vikings and Lions have not seen a Super Bowl since they went indoors. Now, that has a chance to change this year, and you're right, you could play the audio, and I will be, you don't even have to play the audio, because I'll be the first one to say, wow, they did it. Congratulations. But until that happens, what I'm saying is just true. And I think it sucks for their fans and for the advantage that they willingly decided to give up.
Counterpoint, I've seen the Green Bay Packers fail to go to Super Bowls because they start playing a lot of cold weather January games that their team can't handle. Whether it was Brett Favre throwing that pick in 07 to Rodgers versus the 49ers as he got a little bit older, too.
It's not a perfect science.
I'm just saying, there. You know, depending on how you build the team, too, you got to properly
That's
build it
That's
well.
Not a perfect science, but here's what is a perfect science. If you're a cold weather team that builds a dome, you don't go to the Super Bowl. Until proven otherwise, that's perfect.
Except for the Colts.
Thanks well, the Colts.
The problem
but
with the Colts.
They play in the South.
They do, because think about the teams
and
in their division.
They did have an all-time quarterback.
What was that?
They did have an all-time quarterback.
And they had an all-time quarterback, and that probably helped Peyton Manning playing indoors. But you play in a division with a team from Nashville, a team from Houston, a team from Jacksonville, Florida. It's a little bit different than what the Lions and Vikings have to do when they go to Chicago or they go to Green Bay, and that's not something they're accustomed to because they built a dome.
Yeah, but I also think that you give the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Houston Texans, and the Tennessee Titans, like a flat playing field, an even playing field when they come to you in the fall,
fall and winter. I agree. I think you help them a little bit, too, with that.
Absolutely.
It's
a neutral environment. Now, it's louder if you're good enough in your fan base. And the fan base is always pretty good in Indianapolis.
They also pumped in fake crowd noise.
True, but it's loud, but that's about the only advantage you have.
Jack is calling from Oakland, New Jersey. What's up, Jack?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
It's good.
Good.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. I was just chiming in, too. I agree with you 100%. I'm Bill Sanford. I'm old 50 years now. And the people in Buffalo had a choice. they were talking about it, Bill, and they said, no, they don't care if it snows 6 feet. You saw them out there shoveling, right? That's what they want. And I agree with you 100%. You're going to have Houston come in, Jacksonville come in, or the Dolphins in January, and you're gonna close the roof and make a knife?
No, chance.
Makes no sense.
Yeah.
And they do get paid, by the way, you guys. They get $20 an hour,
right?
Plus food, plus hot beverages. So they actually do get something for doing what they're going to do
it's
there.
It's non-union, though.
It's non-union. But you know what the best part is? Forget about the $20. Forget about the hot chocolate. The selfie you get to take of you shoveling snow.
Right.
At the home of the Buffalo Bills.
Buffalo is a special place, man. Like, the fans there are, first of all, they're the nicest people you've ever met.
Excuse me?
I'm just telling you, they just are.
They are.
Generally, I'm not talking about on game day.
I have not heard the same.
I'm just talking about in general, they are, the town of Buffalo is the nicest people I've ever encountered.
Salt of the earth, they say, Tiki.
100%. We were up there calling the game, whatever it was, a month ago or so. We were out, me and Andrew went out, and it was like, I don't think we bought a drink. Nobody knew.
Really?
They really didn't know us.
Right.
They were just kind of like, oh, where are you guys from? We're like, oh, we're down from
Who
Jersey.
Were the Buffalo Bills playing that day?
Was it Houston?
Titans. Yeah. Okay, yes. If you were wearing a Tennessee Titan jersey, or you're wearing a jersey of any team in the AFC East,
they would have said, hey, man, good luck to y'all tomorrow.
Is that true?
Absolutely. Now, on game day, it wouldn't have been as nice, I'm sure.
The only reason
leading up to it?
I have not experienced it personally, so I'm not going to fight you to the death. I've never been to Buffalo for a football game. I do want to, but when I've talked about wanting to, I've been warned by people that have been up there who say it's a vicious, vicious environment.
No chance. No chance.
You know what? Ask Joe when he joins us at 4 o'clock. I think he was one of the guys who said, bro, that place, they're freaking animals, bro.
It may be a game day thing. I went to Cleveland. Again, salt of the earth, great people. Game day came. I had really dark sex toys thrown at me.
Really?
In the parking lot, the Muni lot. I'm walking through with an Odell Beckham jersey, and I got hit in the back with a sex toy.
Is that really a strategy to, like, taunt other fans? Like, we're going to throw sex toys at you?
Apparently, that's what the dog pound does. They take sex toys and chuck it at opposing fans if they walk through the tailgate.
Did it hit you?
Oh, wow.
Right in the back of the shoulder. I looked down and said, oh, my God, look at that thing.
Did you pick it up?
I didn't take it home?
No, I didn't take it home. I didn't touch it. I didn't know where that thing had been.
This is a memento.
Yeah. Like, you could tell your kids, I once got this thrown at me while I was at a Cleveland Browns game.
It was intimidating. I piped down.
We mentioned Joe B will join us coming up at 4 o'clock. Your calls, 888-808-1019. Missed any of the show, you can rewind on the Odyssey app. Just rewind to 2 o'clock, and you'll hear me basically saying the Jets suck, and it's mostly Aaron Rodgers' fault. Joe Beningo will join us coming up at 4 o'clock. We'll make our pick for Monday night's game later on as well. I caution you that on Thanksgiving, I may have had too much to drink. So, if this is out of bounds, please let me know. The New York Giants and the Dallas Cowboys played a game that was awful to watch. It was actually disgusting to watch. The Drew Lock pick six that got tipped up by Overshawn in return for a touchdown changed everything about the game. The Giants had a chance to win the game. It was a close game at the half. Then Dallas took a big lead. Giants made it reasonably close at the end. But they lost a game in which, in a nutshell, they didn't quit. And they competed. And a week ago at this time, while we were sitting here, we were bemoaning that Brian Daboll can lose his job if this gets any uglier than what we saw on that previous Sunday, where it appeared like they didn't show up. And maybe, as you pointed out, Tiki, was the hangover over the Daniel Jones situation.
Definitely was.
So
do
you
distracted?
Okay. Do you think that the Giants showing up enough on Thanksgiving is enough to take Coach Daboll and his seat, which was very, very hot, and lower the temperature just a tad?
I mean, I don't think it was very, very hot. I think it was getting warm. But to me, it's all about how these guys play. And are they playing hard for you? I think the biggest indicator that you've lost a team is when guys just kind of lay down.
Mm-hmm.
They just stop trying. They don't care about what happens on a given play or a drive or a series or whatever it may be. I didn't feel that. It kind of felt like that against Tampa as I was calling the game. Maybe that was just because I was too close to it. I was calling it, and I saw every little detail of what went wrong, and it just felt flat. But I didn't see that against Dallas. On a short week with your now starter quarterback, Tommy DeVito, out and Drew Lock having to play, it still felt like they fought. You know, and I think that's important. I'm not saying it's going to keep Brian Daboll employed, but I'm just saying I think it's important.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very important. I also think, though, that we still have a big, big tomato can hanging here at the end of the season, which is he might have saved it for now. They played hard. That's important. I still think he can't survive going winless at home. Hmm. So I kind of throw Thanksgiving out. I think that's a big deal to the owner.
Two more chances.
Yeah.
Right?
So, yeah.
The Saints this weekend.
And then the Ravens. Oh, the Ravens.
Do they also have the Falcons at home?
They're in Atlanta for that game.
I've lost track,
and this is how much it doesn't matter. But the point is, I'm disappointed in you, Sean.
Right.
I've watched this team,
That's where we are at the state of the season.
I watched that game, and I must have rattled off 9 tweets on a lot of Tito's about how much playing hard mattered because I really want Dable to keep his job. And I think it did, and I think the team's caring. But now you're talking about a team without Dexter Lawrence, Theo Johnson, and not winning a game at home. That might be the one more than anything that. Playing hard matters for one portion. That's another embarrassment that he may not be able to overcome.
Go ahead. I was going to say it'll be interesting because I was interested to see what the attendance was going to be like 2 weeks ago or before Thanksgiving, the first Tommy DeVito game. And it actually wasn't bad. Now, once it got bad, they just kind of left.
Right.
Yeah.
When it was 30 to nothing, they just kind of filtered their way out. This weekend, it'll be interesting because a lot of kids are starting to get home from school. Right. So, like, AJ's done with school for he wants to go to the game this weekend. And so he might go to the game this weekend. So, what's it look like? Or do people just say,
does that matter in John Mara's thinking on keeping or moving
his
head coach?
It matters, I think, from a ownership standpoint, people give a you know what about the team.
Right.
And if they don't, then they just won't show up.
Yeah.
So, if they show up, we'll see. Now, a lot of it will depend on the weather. It's going to be chilly this weekend.
Yeah.
It's December in New York.
They also do have 3 more games at home, so they have 3 more opportunities. The Saints, the Ravens, and Indianapolis, week 17. So they've got 3 more home games. That's funny. So do you... Because I've said for a while, I can't imagine this administration survives 2-15.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, especially after losing to Tampa and losing to Dallas, you kind of look at it and say, wow, they may be on their way to 2-15. That almost seems like the likeliest scenario. So you're saying it's not the 2-15, it's losing every game at home?
Yeah, I think that's a big deal because I think that's prideful to ownership that sits there in an owner's box and watches all his fans go through the turnstiles. And this is not something that any of us have experienced in our lifetime, right? It was, what, 73 or 70, whenever, and they weren't even in the Meadowlands yet. The idea.
Yeah, they went 0 for their home season in 1974, in which their home games were at the Yale Bowl.
Yeah, and it's just hard. Now you're 3 years into regime, and there's a million things we could point to if we really, you know, got microed about this. But tune into one giant step for those of why this has gone awry, but to lose every game at home, I'm just putting myself in the owner's shoes. I think that's the one thing that he can't overcome. While saving your job and having the team play hard is one thing, that is another.
And you still want him fired, right, Tommy?
Yeah, I'll take it a step further. Oh, I thought Dable's reaction after the Tracy touchdown was so over the top and for the television cameras. Like, give me a break. The defense still let go of the rope in the second half.
Maybe he was just happy for Tyrone Tracy.
And they had a lead! No. Your team just quit and got embarrassed, so you felt like you had to go over the top after a touchdown. To me, it was ridiculous, and it was just a way to show, see, we didn't lose the locker room, we didn't quit, here we go. It was total baloney.
I think that was totally phony. Keep this in mind, because you guys added 2 things about that touchdown, the opening drive touchdown by Tyrone Tracy. He was also benched to start the game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if that played a part of it, too. Like, it was only 3 plays. I don't want to make it as if he was benched forever.
Right. He just didn't start.
He didn't start.
He had established himself as the starter.
Right.
And he just didn't start.
But don't you think that's sort of a benching?
Yeah.
Would you take it as a benching if this was you?
Not really. Benching, to me, is not playing.
Okay.
He's still a fifth-round rookie.
No. You know what I consider that? Coaching. He showed the kid, I believe in you, but you know what?
There's consequences, right?
That's it. There's consequences for keeping on fumbling. And I like that. It's a guy who's still coaching down this. Here's the biggest issue.
He knows that. I'm still loving the fact that you're pissed off he was too happy after the touchdown.
It's so stupid. But I just think when it comes back.
You hate Dable so much.
Did that not come on? That was so over the top.
It's the first time they've had a lead since the Seattle game.
And whose fault is that? His. So to be that over the top and that ridiculous, coming off of what they came off of on Sunday and everything the week prior,
you know,
to me that was premeditated.
He's being an example.
Yes.
And if he's got to be an example, he's got to be the example.
Also, over top, and I mean, all your stuff about splitting Soto shares and wanting Tommy DeVito to start.
Well, how does
you are the representation of that.
What does that have to do with anything?
The point is...
That's out of bounds, Sean. That's nothing to do with
it. Oh, you can go out of bounds.
The point
has nothing to do with it.
It's hypocritical. I appreciate that the team still fought because you got to remember this. What was every excuse for why Brian Dable was going to get fired? going into that game was when the locker room quits, that's what happened to Matthew.
Yeah, no doubt, no
the
doubt.
Locker room is not quitting on him, period.
They quit in the second half, though. The defense let go of the rope again.
They were 27-10, and they were a ridiculous Cooper Rush throw away from having the ball back in 2 minutes left.
That final score was not indicative of the game. Dallas dominated the game. Dallas stinks. If Dallas was anywhere near good, that game would have been an absolute blowout. You know it. Locke got most of his stuff, and this is not a quarterback thing. We won't make it about
that. They didn't quit, though. They forced back-to-back punts against the Dallas offense.
They still got the ball
to give themselves an opportunity to come back.
They cannot stop the run.
That's not quitting.
And
that's not quitting. Like, I think that while they fell behind by two scores, and I would agree with you, actually three scores, it was 27-10, so technically it was a three-score game, and I agree with you that those numbers were made to look close based on the finish, that's also a sign of not quitting, because they did have themselves like that mini opportunity to come back. Their defense got off the field on back-to-back possessions in the fourth quarter that at least gave themselves an opportunity. So, here's the problem. They didn't quit. If I need to be the judge here to diagnose, the Giants fought on Thanksgiving against the Dallas Cowboys, and I will sit here and give them a golf clap. I have a tough time imagining 2-15 is enough. I stand by that. It's just it's tough to get past, man.
If you look at the history, coaches that have lost, that have only had four wins, they don't make it the next year. The last one was obviously Joe Judge in his last season. It was 4-13. He got fired. McAdoo in the Spagnuolo year, before that, Shurmur going backwards to sending Omer, he was 4-12 in 2019. He got fired. McAdoo was 3-13. He got fired. The only one before that is Jim Fossil. His last season, he was 4-12 in 2003. Now, it's interesting because he was kind of fired before the end of the season. Like, I think it was week 14 or 13. He came and told us, I'm going to coach for the rest of the year, but I'm not going to be here next year type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that led to the, I don't know, the whatever at the end of the year. But you don't win five games, you don't stay as head coach.
No, especially when it's your third year and it's trending the wrong way.
But the challenge is third. I know it's the third year, but think about this. If Dabes gets fired after his third season, the Giants will have been 2 years and fired, 2 years and fired, 2 years and fired, 3 years and fired.
Yeah.
That's just, how are you ever establishing what we're trying to call a culture? It just can't happen because you're just starting over too many times.
Okay, but let me ask you this. And this was the synopsis of
a
point.
And by the way, I don't think it's glaring that there's not one. With Joe Judge, it was glaring that there was distrust, there was hate, there was dysfunction within the team and the coaching staff. Obviously. I mean, they were fighting. The coaches were fighting each other.
we've heard that.
Pat Shurmur felt the same way, whether it was just because the staff wasn't right or whatever it was. It didn't. What was the culture? You can't even identify it. McAdoo, it felt like a disaster from the very beginning.
So that's my point. Did any of those three guys not deserve to lose their job?
No, they all did.
Exactly. So I get the whole there's been a lot of turnover, but if we look individually at why there was turnover, it's because they hired the wrong people. And the people had their opportunity and they failed.
But now you're talking about a guy who did win Coach of the Year, whose locker room has not quit, and basically outside of Wink Martindale walking away, there's no fist fights are happening
here.
No,
and it's funny you say that. So I got a text message. It was a very drunken text message from a friend of mine who's a diehard Giant fan. And it was so stupid, but then I thought about it, and I was like, I think this makes a lot of sense. Sometimes when you're drunk, like, you actually bring up a good point.
Go ahead.
And I can't find it on my phone, so I'm going to summarize it for you. He basically said, look, they deserve to lose their job. The team sucks. They're going to go 2-15, but I don't trust anybody in management to hire the right guy. They screwed it up with McAdoo. They screwed it up with Shurmur. They screwed it up with Joe Judge. And Brian Daboll at least has given me the inkling of competence. Yeah. So I'd rather give him a fourth year, give him a young quarterback, than trust John Mara and whoever's making the decision to hire the right person, because so far they're 0-3. And I was like, that's actually a damn good point. I know that's not the most compelling point, because it's like, wait a second, do you think Brian Daboll's the answer or not? Lugie's obviously very passionate that he's not, but the guys who's hiring the replacement, they failed every time. Now you think they're going to find the right guy?
I think Dabes more is than he isn't. I think I couldn't have said that about McAdoo. I definitely couldn't have said it about Joe Judge. Maybe Shurmur, just because his offensive mind, like, they were good for a while. It just never really came together. I think it's more yes than no with Dave. And so it's just a matter of getting a better team and a better quarterbacking situation. Not necessarily a better quarterback, because Daniel was good at points. Obviously, he was good in 2022. But the situation was never right. It never felt, like, comfortable, copacetic.
And it was never truly his guy.
Yeah, but it was always like, I guess we'll go with Daniel type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It just never felt like, I'm fully behind you. Let's go. Let's make this thing happen.
You're walking me into what I think, personally, is my best point I've ever made about keeping Brian Daboll and Joe Shane. All right?
Is it better than my drunk friend's point?
Yes. Okay,
okay, go ahead.
Hear me out.
Because your drunk friend's point is just a negative flipping to a positive.
Yes!
Right. I don't trust
ownership to find someone better, so let me stick with the guy who won Coach of the Year 2 years ago and take a flyer on that.
I understand the point. So we're all striving for stability, right?
Yes,
and
yes.
This is obviously the Giants are at the point they're going to be picking first, second, or third in the draft, and we know whether it's Joe Shane or Brian Daboll or it's a new regime that comes in, we all agree they're probably going to take a swing on a quarterback because the team doesn't have one, right?
Right.
And everybody to a T who has covered these quarterbacks in the draft has said there is no lock like Andrew Luck, so you're going to have to pick the right guy. So this is the way I approach it. I would rather the guy who just had the best draft he's had and the best draft the Giants have had in a long time, despite his flaws, and the coach brought in to work with a young quarterback, be the one to make that selection, then bring in another regime who will be a month or two behind the eight ball, then make a selection anyway. Because what happens if the quarterback is a bust? Forget him being good. If the quarterback is a bust, well, this regime that you want out, they'll be out in 2 years because the quarterback busted anyway.
Right.
But if it's a new regime you hire, they panic take this quarterback and he's a bust. Guess what? In 2 years, you're firing these guys again.
Yeah.
So why do I want to take this quarterback pick and turn it into firing two regimes if it fails? And if it works, then great. You're going to be proving your worth on stability.
Right. And if this turns into a Matt Eberflus type of situation, who lost his job this past weekend or because of mismanagement of the clock embarrassing fashion, you can draft a quarterback and then get fired right away.
Yes.
Now, granted, he's a defensive coach, not an offensive coach, so he doesn't get the benefit of the doubt of trying to fix Caleb Williams or get him right because it's not under his purview. It's why Thomas Brown took over as the interim head coach for the short term for the Bears. But I think it just shows you, just because you let them draft a quarterback doesn't mean they're going to be here until the quarterback goes through 5 years.
No, you're right. You'll be on the hot seat anyway.
Yes.
If Brian 100%. Daboll and Joe Shane are allowed to draft a young quarterback at number one overall and number two overall, that doesn't give them a three-year extension.
No.
I know we like to think that and say, oh, but you got to give time for the quarterback to develop. If you don't see early signs and the team loses a lot, Brian Daboll could be gone.
And then you draft a quarterback again, by the way. Who cares?
I think that's a good point, too. I think a lot of Giant fans, some drunk, some Sean Morash, are making fair points on why you hold on. But I think it is going to be very difficult with five games to go left in this season. Is that how many we have left? Yes, five games to go.
And before you finish that, Dexter Lawrence a minute ago officially on IR, done for the year.
Right. And so the tools at the disposal of this roster are not very good. With that even said, and who knows who the quarterback's going to be? Drew Locke stunk. He wasn't any good. I'm not making the point he should start if Tommy DeVito's healthy. I don't think anyone's going to make that point.
No.
And so don't worry, Tommy. No, right. No fighting. We're all with you. Bring Tommy DeVito back.
I told you. Poor decisions.
But if they go 2-15, that's historic in the history of this franchise. That's one of the worst seasons that this franchise has ever had. And that's a tough thing to fight back from, even when you hear Sean's fair point and my drunk friend's point.
I would counter this to Sean, and I love Malik Nabers. Let me couch that. Do you think Brian Daboll has handled Malik Nabers well in his first year?
What do you mean?
Meaning the stuff that Malik has said.
Why don't you just tell us what you want to say?
Meaning Malik, even after he's had way too many drops. I love Malik Nabers. You can't be dropping this many
balls.
He's
a rookie.
I understand, but he's had a lot of drops. He's had a lot to say after the games, and I feel like it's part of also just the culture that's around where a rookie is basically allowed to say whatever is on his mind. Oftentimes, it's against what they're doing.
A rookie says whatever's on his mind because he's asked right after an emotional game. They shouldn't let him talk after games, to be honest with you. Let him have a conversation with a staff member. A day and then talk the day after. But it's just the way football is. You have to be able to, you're available after games. And I don't think Malik Willis is getting advice on how he should handle the emotions of these games before he's allowed to talk to the media. That's a fact. That's what's happening. Because when he walks it back, he says the right things.
Yeah, Malik Nabers is tied with Jaylen Waddle and Amari Cooper for the league lead in drops this year of seven. One thing is, usually the better wide receivers lead the league in drops because they're targeted all the time.
Yeah.
Right. And Malik Nabers is targeted all the time. In fact, just to give you a comparison, so he leads the league. He's tied for the league lead in drops with 7. He's been targeted 116 times. The two guys he's
and
tied with.
5 games left, by the way.
Yeah.
116 times.
No, you're right.
There's 5 games left.
But
most
here's
guys
some,
don't get 100 targets in a season.
Well, here's the perspective on that. Amari Cooper, who he's tied with, has been targeted 66 times. 116 to 66. Jalen Waddle has been targeted 60 times. Nobody has been targeted more than 90 times on this list of drop leaders. And there he is with 116. So he has dropped a lot of passes, and some of them have felt in critical situations, so yes. I do agree with you. But perspective matters, and I wanted to offer that.
And some of them have felt like easy.
Yeah.
Right? There's there's no reason.
No doubt.
The Washington game. Getting, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're not getting hit. The ball's in your hands. Just catch it. You've done this 1,000 times in your life. So it's those moments that seem unexplainable that frustrate you.
Yeah, I mean, CeeDee Lamb had a brutal drop on Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
I'll start worrying about Malik Nabers' drops when he gets settled in with an actual NFL quarterback that is not thrown behind him, above him, around him, and actually hitting him in stride.
Let's go to Tyler in Caldwell, New Jersey. Tyler.
What up, Tyler?
Hey, guys. Happy Monday. So I'm not going to do what the average Giant fan does right now and say this guy needs to be fired, that guy needs to be fired. Because even if they do have the number one overall pick, I think we could all agree that one player isn't going to change the entire trajectory of the team right now.
Right.
What I am going to do is add a different perspective to this. So you think of all the historically successful teams in this league. Let's start with the Niners. They, you know, had that West Coast offense. They were able to move the ball wherever. And even when they lost the Super Bowl in 2012, they had that offense, and they have it now. When you look at teams like the Raiders, for example, always had that bone-crushing defense, that underdog looking for something to prove, quarterback and Stabler after he sat behind Namath at Alabama, and Jim Plunkett, you know? Even Cincy, you know, when they made their Super Bowls, they had that same kind of identity. They had the MVP quarterback every year, the Burrow, the Kenny Anderson, the Boomer. The Giants, every time they won a Super Bowl, they had the same things. They had the good offensive line. They could run the football.
Mm-hmm.
They could get after the passer. They stopped the run. And they didn't have the game-by-game insane quarterback play.
Right.
But they had the clutch quarterback play.
Yeah.
So Phil my Sims, question is...
Phil Sims, Eli, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
But my thing is, why wouldn't they try and lean into that? And I understand the game changes, but the Giants have won a Super Bowl in every decade since 1980.
Lean into right. what, though? Just, lean into what, specifically?
Lean into build defense.
Yeah.
Build a great offensive line so,
right.
so your run game is stout and dependable and it's going to get you 2,200 yards rushing
mm-hmm.
a season and get a clutch quarterback. Not necessarily, you don't need Pat Mahomes is basically what he's saying.
Right, right.
You need someone who you can count on to know what he's doing, to make the right decisions in the right moment.
Well, I think they've tried to do that. Like, I think they tried, and I fell victim to this because I thought this was going to be the case this year. I thought their identity this year was going to be this ferocious pass rush.
Mm-hmm.
And for a while, it sort of worked. They were leading the league in sacks,
yeah.
but that's only one stat.
Right.
They've dropped over the last 5 weeks. The
right.
Jets have more team sacks than the Giants have.
How many sacks? They haven't had a sack in, I feel like, 2 or 3 weeks.
I agree because they went from
they were
being
36 in first.
Yeah, they're 36 and sixth now.
Right.
So they haven't had a sack in weeks, and they've dropped from being the team with the most team sacks in the NFL to being behind the Jets and being sixth in the NFL.
Right. Which is still good.
It's still good, but it's not good considering where they were 4 weeks ago.
Because think about when you're in one score games, a sack or two or three. Make a difference.
Oh, no doubt.
In the outcome of a game.
I thought that was going to be their identity,
right.
and their identity now is just being a bad football team. And that's an unfortunate place to be. Speaking of bad football teams, an expert on such things, Joe Beningo joins us in his weekly
I
spot.
I can't take it.
His thoughts on the Jet debacle and where things stand after another brutal home Jet loss. Plus, we'll get back to your calls at 888-808-1019. We'll check in on our Drew Lock bet and see who is most accurate in predicting the stat line of Drew Lock. And Tom Brady took a massive you-know-what all over Daniel Jones. We address if it was fair or not.